Doc Dwight Gooden is someone who moves me. He is an inspiration. He, of course, was a legendary pitcher. His first season, he was named Rookie of the Year. Second, won 25 games, earning the Triple Crown, one of the most prestigious awards in baseball, the Cy Young Award. 1986, when the Mets won the World Series, Gooden's life changed forever. Instead of celebrating with his teammates, he watched them on TV because he was wasted. He was blurry-eyed, drunk, high. For the next 25 years, Dwight Doc Gooden battled alcoholism and addiction. And he chronicles this now in his new memoir. I cannot recommend it highly enough. Please order your copy of Doc from Amazon today. Click through at the Amazon banner at drdrew.com or adamanddrdrewshow.com and read this really amazing story. He shows intimate moments of successes, failures, three World Series rings to endless self-destructive binges. And I'm telling you, when I first treated this man, his shame was palpable. He was ashamed, and he wanted to come clean about all of this to everybody once and for all, and to his family. He has a profoundly tender relationship with his eldest son, whom he was planning to play professional baseball with and instead shared jail cells. Doc Gooden, a story of family, baseball, and talent squandered by the disease of addiction, and of course, his road to recovery. A rich, rich story, a true human being, and an inspiration.
This is Corolla Digital.
Welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. Lynette Corolla joins me once again.
I love that music, Drew.
Well, funny you would say that.
It sounds like a therapist's office, too.
You can buy that music at iTunes with several other groovy tunes called The Swing and Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast. It's on the website.
Yeah.
And we give you, Chris, would you give her a shoot?
Handpicked by Drew.
Handpicked by me. They're very cool. Chris and I are going to come up with a couple more.
Never fails to get the guests head bobbing.
Yeah.
And it's getting good reviews on iTunes stuff. Can you believe it? That's crazy.
It's a little Herb Albert.
Yeah, but it's groovy. Certain kind of thing. So, in addition to supporting the show by heading over to iTunes and picking up the groovy tunes, please do click through at Amazon.com and support the people that support the show. You hear Adam and I talking about these various products that we use because we do use them, and they make this whole thing possible. And Lynette backed me up on this.
It's true.
Adam's on my ass, all of our asses to sell and make sure these things keep this.
Oh, yes, afloat. Yes. Or he'll cancel your ass.
I know that.
He ain't afraid to can
no,
anybody.
I get that. And I would like to keep doing this. And it's been a lot of fun. I hope people appreciate what we do here. And we do appreciate you supporting the show. So do so if you possibly can.
Yes.
In addition to the great Lynette Corolla, I have Cheryl Arrett here with me today. Cheryl, hi.
Hi.
This is a very special show. Cheryl, you can see her at the Twitter handle, Dr. Cheryl, C-H, Arrett, A-R-U-T-T. Her website is drcherylarrett.com. Facebook, / Dr. Arrett, A-R-U-T-T. And you guys may know Cheryl from my HLN program, where she is a frequent contributor and co-host and a big find for us in terms of talent. Aww. And ability and training. And Cheryl, just to gush for a second, I was telling Lynette that, and Cheryl knows this, she's like a carbon copy of my therapist. And so I immediately was drawn to her. Not just to her, but in.
Yeah.
I'd go into like a different state when I was
I'm telling you, I'm a huge fan of the show, and I'm a huge fan of Cheryl. And I'm not just saying that. When you talk, it's like I want to hear more. I know Drew's got like 30 seconds in your head, with the TV crap. But I want to hear more. I want to hear what you say, and you're so spot on and so dialed in and tuned into what's going on.
Thank you, Lynette.
Well, and I will say that in addition to her reminding me of the demeanor, I knew she had that kind of talent, I call it, for a good therapist. But she and I would talk and share ideas, and she's involved in and tuned into stuff that I think is the shit. I think it's really the core, the really essential stuff of behavioral intervention, say, psychotherapy and
Thank
stuff like
you.
That.
We have a good time.
We do have a good time, but as Cheryl knows, Alan Shore, who will do an episode coming up. Do we have an episode number for that one yet?
Mm-hmm.
And he's amazing. And I have Steve Porges and all these various people that mm-hmm. we've all discussed.
And Dan Siegel.
Dan Siegel is like a heroine.
You got to get in here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think Dan
really?
Siegel.
He'd be great.
That is another one. Daniel Siegel is one. He'd be fantastic. Shore is episode number 65. And Porges, I think, was like 41 or something. Anyway, so let's Charlotte and Lynette were doing a podcast. I think it was the last podcast, in fact. And Porges is 63, and oh God, Mike Catherwood is They texted me during the show. Yes.
If I was Adam, I'd yell at you.
Of course you would. Does it irritate you as much as it would irritate
him?
Okay. Well, Adam is who and I excuse me, Lynn and I were talking about last podcast, and we got to a spot that I really didn't feel I could satisfactorily address, A, because it's not really my training, and B, I'm pretty close to the action, so I couldn't really be objective about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try to summarize where we were. We were kind of talking about his bitterness. Right?
Yes.
We were talking about how Adam – Lynn has a son.
Do you know Adam?
I know who your husband is. Okay. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting him.
Okay, good.
So she has a son that is like one of the most sensitive, sweet kids on earth.
We have twins, Cheryl and I.
Yeah,
boy, girl,
yes.
Twins.
Yes, yeah. We all share multiples. Everyone at this table here.
We do.
And I've come to learn through knowing some of Adam's friends that Adam was very much like that as a kid. He was severely neglected by his parents, severely. And parents were like disconnected, and it really just a disconnect is the main note.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't abusive or anything. They just were checked out. There's Sonny with Adam right there in that picture.
He's just a bag of sugar.
Gorgeous.
So sweet.
Yeah, gorgeous.
He's
really
yummy.
Sweet kid.
And he's in tune with people's feelings, too.
Yes. And so Adam went from being severely neglected to joining a peer group of fucking
assholes.
Animals that made it their job to break him down.
Still friends with them.
And still friends. And
on the show the other day.
They were like the original wolf pack, if you're familiar with Hangover.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Right?
I bet your house is fun.
Yes.
And there's Natalia there having her
my dog with her pink hair, chocolate chip.
Does she wear glasses for reals, or is that just
fun?
Yeah,
no, she wears glasses. She needs glasses.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
She doesn't like her daddy so much, but she does now.
We need to talk about that, too.
Okay, all right, we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we were talking about how Lynette deals with the fact that he has trouble with perspective taking. He really, particularly in many moods, can't adopt another person's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
He can in certain moments, and he's insightful and talks psychology and is willing to do it, but his structure is such that a lot of the time he can't. And how does she deal with
that? Is that like Asperger's, though, or no?
He has a
traits,
a quality where he likes mechanical stuff, and he tends not to make good eye
contact. Like good
those sorts of Aspergian kind of things, but I don't think it's really that. We sort of kid about that.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Mm-hmm. So how is there something she can do to get
well,
him to sort of?
Well, it's hard. I was telling Drew, it's hard to be married to somebody. Although we've been together 17 years, mm-hmm. married for 10. It's hard. It is hard to be in a marriage with somebody like that, because he doesn't have very much empathy, right?
He has capacity for it, but it's hard to trigger it.
Right.
It's hard to,
okay.
And it really feels more like, because I've been in this rapport with him, and mm-hmm. He can't take another person's point of view in most circumstances. He has the capacity for it, but he gets very defensive.
It's hard for him to make that shift.
He gets defensive in if you ask him to make that shift.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you, Lynette, are somebody who seems very people-oriented and warm and likes to connect.
Mm-hmm.
And so my guess is that you make kind of bids to connect with him and mm-hmm. share something with him.
Right.
And then how does it leave you feeling when he isn't able to go there?
Well,
tell the homeland story.
Now,
tell the homeland story.
The homeland. We're at the point now where I'm sort of used to it, kind of numb to it, and I've
but
accepted
if it didn't
it.
Bother you, you wouldn't be talking.
Right.
About it.
Well, of course. Right. So we were having it was during Christmas break, and I watched the series Homeland. I got really
Love
into
Homeland.
It. Ugh, I know.
Love it.
So I was telling him, you should watch. And he's, I know it's great, but I don't have a lot of time, blah, blah, blah. So I was cooking dinner, and I just watched an episode, and it was fresh in my head. And I was like, I want to tell you about, what the plot is, because maybe you'll watch it, So I started explaining to him what was going on in the show.
Uh-huh. And by the way, before you tell your story, let's preface this whole thing, because we framed this in the last episode. We said, mm-hmm. we all love Adam.
Oh, yeah.
We all know that.
Oh, that's clear.
Deep affection and love and all this stuff for him. But it's these moments. And I think he would cop to them, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah, he would.
But it's when he's in them, it's hard to get. So
right.
Go ahead. So
well, can I just say, if you didn't want more of him, this wouldn't bother you.
That's true. Wow, she's good.
I know, she's excellent. So go ahead. So you're at home,
right? Oh, interesting. so I'm cooking dinner. And I said, I want to tell you about Homeland. And he was like, all right, And he's trying to fix his jump rope or whatever. And in the middle of explaining to him, he goes, oh, hold on. Who makes these jump ropes with these handles that? Why would somebody blah, 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 blah? And there's, 7 minutes of complaining about his jump rope. And then he's like, all right, I'm going to go skip my rope. Like the homeland conversation.
And it's not a metaphor.
No. And so this happens all the time. Uh-huh. And with the kids, you know. So
can I ask you something? Because your guy's he's a performer guy. He's a mm-hmm. comedy guy. When mm-hmm. he starts doing that thing with the who makes these jump ropes?
Right.
Was he kind of doing it in a kind of a stand-up-y
no.
kind of way, or
no.
was he just
the opposite
about it? Okay.
No, he believes and he lives okay. his rants.
However,
he carries it at
I
home.
Do believe he does catalog those things for use later.
Okay.
Yeah.
He is
oh,
a little
yeah.
bit, he is kind of working things
some
through.
Some creative right. people, a lot of the people I work with are in the business in mm-hmm. some way. And some creative people will go to that, playing to their strength to try to connect or engage you in,
right.
in that way.
They can't
so I just
turn
wanna,
it off kind of thing.
They go on because they want to go on. I've actually had some wives go, you know, you character you play, leave and bring my husband back.
Right.
You know,
right.
I want him to,
right.
to be here with me.
Right.
So you wanted to give him the...
Well, no, let's stop with that.
But,
would that
okay,
be a strategy?
No. You no. guys know. That's Adam's complaining off
it's
air.
For
is this is for real.
Yeah,
I mean, he... Right? You guys shaking their heads.
Yeah,
yes.
It's real.
So it goes... Right, Gary?
Yeah, his complaining on air is for real, too. It's,
yeah.
it's all
oh,
for real.
Yeah.
He can't... He it's not a show, you know. I mean, luckily what he says is very entertaining, very interesting and provocative. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, the good news is that. The bad news is he. That's how he is at home, too.
And if it's in the middle of you saying, hey, there's something
yeah.
really important to me and I want to share it with you, he's
And this is what we got
else.
To last time is that okay. I needed her to say to him, this is important.
Mm-hmm.
This is important
yeah.
to me. And I know it's not important to you. And the other thing he needs is a lot of appreciation, like a lot of feet, like we really appreciate what you're doing for
mm-hmm.
us.
Yeah.
Because he does a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. He works hard. But we did get an argument during that. I said, you know, it hurt my feelings when you went and jumped rope. And it was the same. It was the same night I cooked him dinner. And he complains that I don't cook very much. I made him a nice dinner. He came in and he said, oh, that looks great. And he sits down with his back towards me, turns the TV on. He's quiet. He's eating his dinner. Mm-hmm. And then he gets up and he's like, that was nice, Mom. I'm going to go skip my rope, and walks away. And it's like, you know, and so I brought it up to him. I said, that bothered me, and the homeland thing bothered me. And did mm-hmm. you realize that you did that, you know? And
how does he respond when you give him feedback like that?
He hears it, and he says, I can understand that, you know. But then if I keep talking about it, he gets defensive, mm-hmm. and then he gets angry, and then there's an argument. And then he said, during that argument, he said, well, you're right. I'm never going to care about homeland. I'm never going to care about homeland, which is, you know, a metaphor mm-hmm. like, I don't care what you talk about. I don't care what the kids talk about, you know.
Uh-huh.
And that's how he is.
But I care about
right.
homeland.
Right.
So when you make it like we both have to be the same about
mm-hmm.
what we care about,
mm-hmm.
that's something that you'd end up butting heads about.
Mm-hmm.
How does he respond if you say, okay, I know this isn't your thing, but this is my thing?
Right.
And to let him know how much you appreciate it or how good it feels to you
mm-hmm.
when he can come over there with you and do your thing with you for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Is he
mm-hmm.
able to take that in when you kind of present
We've,
it like
I've
that?
Yeah, I've talked to him about it, and he understands that. He's logical.
Uh-huh.
He's very logical, and he understands that, and he knows. And he apologized about that. He says, if, you know, I apologize. I know that's hurtful and blah, blah, blah. But mm-hmm. And he'll do it for about a month, and then it's gone again. So
yeah.
I guess it's something that I got to keep.
Well, you know, I'm finding myself thinking about what Drew was saying about early life experiences,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the very, very beginning when our brains are growing, so much gets kind of laid down in terms of what kind of care, how much we feel felt
mm-hmm.
as a kid. And
right.
I know you're trying to do that a lot with your children.
Right.
And for people who didn't get a lot of that and who really kind of felt cut off or alone or didn't get mirrored back a lot
mm.
like that, a lot of times they walk around with the sense of themselves as defective or shameful. They get shy. And I can't speak about your husband directly, as I said.
He
I
was like
met,
that
but,
in his, before he was successful.
Okay. So people very often, they have this really deep core true self that
mm-hmm.
is so vulnerable
mm-hmm.
to feeling like they're wrong or they messed up or they're defective, that almost goes into hiding as a self-preservation thing. And very
mm-hmm.
often people who are very successful performers can develop this other kind of sometimes I call it the PR self.
Right.
That they put out there that people love and they get all kinds of praise for. And,
right.
And the more successful that self does, the more deep down inside, very often people are left feeling like, oh, wow, well, who I really am, if I really let you in, really must not be good enough.
And Cheryl, this is what we ended up, this is where I wanted to go.
Okay.
If he has seemed to get a little more bitter and angry as he's gotten older. And we left the last episode going, well, I wonder why that is, because he's doing so well now and he should be appreciated. He's got a great family. He's got a great wife. He's got all the success. And he does all these amazing things in his extracurricular activities. He should really be taking that in. Instead, it seems to be is a little more bitter.
Well, this is an opportunity to heal that true self. What I think challenges somebody who has that deep down inside, that part that gets scared when somebody tries to come too close to them, is that it's not playing to their strengths. It's not in their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been covered up for so long that when they do go there, they don't feel adequate, which is agonizing, especially for someone who has done really well. And so they feel like they're supposed to be seen and exactly. So that sometimes when that can get reframed as an opportunity, when, you know, your wife who knows you better than anybody and loves you completely apart from any of the other things that you may be doing says, hey, I want to share this with you. I want to be close with you. I want us to have some time together because I like being next to you.
Right.
When it can be introduced in that kind of way and as an opportunity, the people who really are able to enjoy that later stage of life are the ones who are able to kind of, through spending time and having these chances to connect in that kind of way, do better later on. Even if they didn't get it as kids. That's what's so cool about it.
The other corollary to this is he brings up his family of origin all the time.
Right.
All the time.
Uh-huh. Like he's still wounded by that. He can't let it go. And he loves to talk about it.
A lot.
Uh-huh.
Almost, every time we have date night, you know, when we're having the conversation, it's always, it comes up a lot. And how do you get somebody to let that go and, you know, I don't know.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, Drew, you and I have talked a lot about trauma and how when somebody has been traumatized and that it can be from neglect as well as other experiences. When you get overwhelmed with your capacity and when you're a kid and it's just too big, whatever is happening for you to feel like you can handle it, if that gets you deeply enough, that sense of not being safe gets disconnected from the present.
Mm.
So it's still happening. Mm-hmm. Even if, you know, it's years later.
Right.
When it keeps coming up, it's because in some way it's still alive inside.
Right.
A frozen hold. It's like still on.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like unprocessed. It's like a little like a ball of this undigested stuff inside.
And what's interesting, what Cheryl's saying is that, you know, I might have gone, well, I'm going to turn around and get back to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what Cheryl's saying is that your relationship is that opportunity to heal that.
Right.
Yeah. That's right.
By telling him that things are important to me and things are important to the kids.
And here's the thing. For somebody to be able to heal from that, sometimes the tricky part is they can get kind of prickly if they feel like they're being criticized.
Right.
If they feel like they're being like they did it wrong.
Right.
The defense mechanisms go, see, there is something defective. Oh, my God.
And she sees it, but I got to – but they never go to feeling the defectiveness. They push it all away.
It's exactly what
he
does.
And they shut down and push
away. Exactly what he does.
Right.
Because he knows that. Like I said, he's logical and he knows
– But he knows it. And he's
cognitively,
mentally.
Well,
no, and he's had enough therapy to know that that's what's happening. But in those states, he can't – it begs an alternative.
Right.
You know, what's really interesting actually is that, you know – Dr. Drew has been very patient with me talking about EMDR because
it's
so amazing.
No, I love it.
There's a short-term therapy that was it's been around for actually about 20 years now. It's for trauma. It is unbelievable and fast, and it basically takes that ball of unprocessed trauma and changes a trauma memory into a regular memory. So what happens to you is you don't get upset. It doesn't grab you anymore. It doesn't have that. And you process it in a positive way.
And it's you look at you. How'd you do it with the box, with the light box?
Well, I use the LED light box. I do this. Here's the thing.
Where's your office?
We're sending Adam right now. Having airlifted.
Yeah, it's I'm so excited about this, and it's really funny because I was the biggest skeptic. I was in graduate school. It's my first year. I went to my first international conference, and I saw Francine Shapiro.
Drama conference or an EMDR conference?
No, it was an international psychotherapy, evolution of psychotherapy conference or something in Vegas. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A bunch of people from my grad school went together. And I saw Francine Shapiro present, and it was new then.
Right.
And I was just
how long ago was this?
Oh, this was, 95 maybe? Oh, wow.
Yeah, when I remember when it came around to you, you're like, how could that be? It's
was
weird.
Like, there's no way this could possibly work. And I kind of sat back and watched it for like maybe 15 years going, there's no way this can work. And then these people who I really respected, like Dan Siegel and Bessel van der Kolk and these people, really were big fans of this and were saying this works. And they were not out there kind of
people.
This
is the highest quality professional academics.
Yeah. Right.
And one day somebody came into my office who I'd been working with and had been doing really well, and basically said that they had been assaulted over the weekend. Mm. And I just went, you know what? There is no way at this point, knowing what I know, that I shouldn't have these tools to be able to help somebody. Mm. I found out where the next first EMDR training was. It was in Seattle. I got on a plane.
Wow.
I started that training. This was a while ago. And
did you do any of it yourself? Did you do any of the work? Did you do it yourself?
I did. Yeah. It's it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Oh,
so,
my God.
So it's good for what we call big T trauma. Like the stuff you think about, like plane crashes and war combat and all this stuff. But here's the really cool thing. It's also really good for small T trauma. And some weird kind of side effecty things have happened. Like, and I have permission from someone to share this, but there was someone who had something got reprocessed that was a trauma memory from childhood that had a bird just present, not central, but present in the early childhood memory. We reprocessed the stuff. Things went fine, had nothing to do with birds. All of a sudden, she comes back from a vacation with her husband and says, you know, we were in this tropical place and I was looking at these gorgeous tropical birds, and my husband said, hey, aren't you afraid of birds?
Oh, wow.
She'd had a phobia and through the EMDR totally forgot about it.
Yeah. Wow.
And she said, you know, I'm also scared of water. Do you think we could maybe work on that too? She started taking swimming lessons and getting seriously bummed if the swimming teacher canceled.
Wow.
I mean, it's wild.
Wow.
So I've seen some incredible peripheral things happen too.
Well, it's anything about therapies of all types. When you shift, everything shifts.
Yes,
it's like plates move. Woo!
But doesn't it take years?
And then, by the way, then your relationship plates shift too.
Right.
Because you will find yourself shifting around.
Right.
It's crazy, and it's all experiential. It's not cognitive.
Did you do it, Drew?
No, but my therapy was based in a lot of this kind of stuff.
But do you ever want to try EMDR? You have anything phobic? I'd love to just
have
fun.
I have phobia.
I do.
Yeah, it's a cool thing, and that's what I thought, Lynette. Doesn't it take years?
Yeah,
this stuff does not take years.
Wow.
This is fast. That's why I was so skeptical.
It's not like hypnotized.
No.
It's in the zone of all that. We don't really know how those things relate. But it's in the...
I think it's different from
hypnosis. I think it is
hypnosis.
Different, too. But just so we kind of don't know what really is... Really, we don't know.
Why isn't anybody talking about this?
Oh,
guys on your show talk about it?
No.
Well, if for 2 seconds...
I remember you mentioning something. Yeah, you did mention something. And it was like an inside joke between the two of you.
Yeah.
That happens. Yeah. That happens. Yeah. But, you know...
No, but I love what I talk about all the time.
EMDR, the thing that does make sense brain-wise is that there's a stage of sleep called rapid eye movement where your eyes move back and forth really fast. And if you let people sleep, no matter how many hours, but you just deprive them of REM sleep, you know this, Doctor.
Memories don't set.
They lose their minds. Yeah. People act sleep-deprived and start to kind of go crazy. There's something that seems to be restorative and kind of digesting of that.
If you wake them up during
if you deprive the eye movement component.
When they start to do it, that's the time when we dream.
Right, right.
And if you let someone sleep and there are all these other phases and you just wake them up when they start to dream and you don't let them have the rapid eye movement sleep, they act like they haven't had any sleep and they really get crazy.
And there's some connection between the free associative experience of dreaming mm-hmm. and rapid eye movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe doing the rapid eye movement may access that same kind of dream-like, let's say,
well,
sort of material.
It seems to kind of cue up the unfinished business where, you know, trauma's fragmenting. It's like it gets stored with the original kind of sounds and sensations, the sensory stuff.
Right.
And these really big feelings. Like if you think about a trauma memory.
Right.
It's got heat around it. Like, you can still get upset if you touch it. But if you think about something that wasn't bad from a long time ago, it feels far away.
Right, you know? Right, right.
So this takes the trauma memory and kind of cues it up, and you move your eyes in a rapid way while you just think about it. And this is where guys like it, because you don't really have to talk. You don't have to go through every little detail.
My sister-in-law. I heard about this.
It's cool. Uh-huh. It's cool. So
let's
it's
Adam.
A fun thing.
Please. Please, yes.
Please,
what does it stand for?
It stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing Therapy. And the woman who invented it said if she had to do it over again, there is no way she would have called it that. She would have called it reprocessing therapy.
And she invented it by walking through the woods one day and noticed when she moved her eye from side to side, something changed.
Something upsetting had just happened.
Crazy.
I have a feeling she had just gotten a cancer diagnosis, but I don't know for sure that that's what it was. I know she's a cancer survivor now, but she noticed in a very ballistic kind of way, she moved her eyes rapidly from one side to the other, and she noticed she didn't feel upset in the same way after when she started researching it because she was a psychologist.
Right.
And something about that eye movement, it stimulates the opposite of the fight or flight system. It's we have this stand down, it's okay, you're safe system.
Mm-hmm.
And
I wonder,
let me
just tell you, the Adams, because he's neglected, has a vagal tone that's like through the roof. So his pulse is like 50.
Yeah, you always say that. What exactly does that mean?
Well, listen to the Porges episode. He's the guy that invented this whole theory about how the vagus works.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get a pulse up. You can't even get him, like, you know, going, because he never had the kind of stimulation from his parents to create a spectrum.
So does he like high-intensity stuff? Does he like sensory things and risk and excitement? And
well, he's a race car driver.
He's a race
there
car
you
driver.
Go. Yeah.
But he doesn't – he doesn't get
a pulse when he's driving.
Right. He's very calm.
He keeps
very calm. And he's so proud of the fact that he keeps calm and he doesn't freak out.
It's impossible to get him excited.
Whereas I'd be in a race car going, oh, my God.
Right.
Thought of a race car.
But he doesn't – like, he's not a thrills – like, he doesn't go jumping out of airplanes and that kind of stuff.
He's not gratified by it. He just – He's good at it because he doesn't get upset.
That's
crazy.
It plays
I'm
to a
so
strength.
I just wonder though, because he's so vaguely toned, if that will affect the effectiveness of EMDR.
Please tell me that's not gonna.
I don't think it will. I mean, Porges talks about fight, flight, and freeze, and that there's this system when both fight and flight fail. Boy, try saying that 10 times.
Well, but that's big. That's trauma inducing dissociative freezing. But he's sort of never comes out of shutdown because he never had any stimulation, emotionally feedback to bring him into the emotional realm.
And he knows this too, by the way. He says,
Well, you know, it's certainly worth a try.
Well,
isn't it?
Yeah. How many sessions normally does it? Do you
because he doesn't really have a trauma memory to call upon. It's just neglect.
Well, you can do screen memories too. What's interesting about this, and there are different protocols that for different things. But what's interesting is that when people have something that blocks them, it gets stored with a negative belief about yourself, and it isn't true. You can intellectually, like from the eyebrows up, know it's not true.
Right.
But you find yourself living as if this thing were true. I am unlovable, or I am not safe, or I'm powerless.
So can you do EMDR on that thought?
But what happens when you do the EMDR, you actually incorporate this as a part of it. It ends up reprocessing the negative belief into something constructive.
Oh,
and
wow,
then you end up boosting a positive constructive belief. It's so cool.
How does
I'll
a negative belief become a positive belief?
Is it something that's genetic?
Well, your own brain seems to know how to do this. This is sort of
what do you
setting
mean genetic?
It up.
Well, I'm just saying, is it a character trait that's sort of passed?
Adam?
No,
his character, his constitution is sunny.
Right.
His stuff he's dealing with is from the neglect.
And if he wasn't neglected, you don't think he would be?
No. No, it'd be very different.
Hmm. But he didn't choose a partner who was cold and not responsive. You're a warm, engaging person. And that's an opportunity to heal. And unless he gets
startled. I think he is healed in many, many, many ways.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He sure actually surrounds himself with people like that.
Yeah. It's just this one piece is sort of still to go.
And I'm speaking in sort of a global way. People who have this kind
of a pattern.
There's all these ways. We used to think that a lot of these things, like your brain, once you're a certain age, you're kind of stuck with what you've got. That's not true anymore. Mm. And it's really exciting, this
that's
neuroplasticity
amazing. That's
thing.
Amazing.
Your brain
now,
can change.
If you have now with the kids, if he comes home or the kids come home and go, Daddy, look at what I did at school, and he looks for a second and then goes and jumps his rope or whatever, does that going to
make them the same way?
But because I'm starting to notice behaviors from Natalia that's concerning me, my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She's I hate to say it, but she seems a little stalky, like a stalker. In fact, me and my girlfriend kind of joked around when she was younger, with 3 and 4, because any girlfriend of mine that came over that was really pretty or whatever, she mm-hmm. wanted to be with her. She wanted to sit. She doesn't know how to respect people's space. And she got a little bit better now that she's 7, mm-hmm. but she's still that way. And when there's the popular girl in the ice skating ring, she wants to be with her. And if she's being ignored by the girl, in her face, you can see it bothers her, and she watches her, and she wants to, mm-hmm. and then she forgives her, you know, even though she treated her like crap for 5 days. It seems to me that she's starting to get this, like, her cup is not full of love, or that
she's
hungry. Yes, and that she's got some sort of separation. She's got anxiety with that kind of stuff. Not exact anxiety,
but Queen Bees and Wannabes? You need to read that.
It's a little older, though, right?
But it'll give her the frame of how these.
Well, I can see it happening already. But she wants, and anybody pays attention to her, she's in their space. She wants to sit on their lap. She wants mm-hmm. to play with their hair. She wants to be with them constantly. And it's a little. Now that she's turning 7, it's starting to worry me.
I wouldn't worry. I wouldn't worry just now. I think that there are. You know, there are periods of time that kids go through. They're so open and they're such sponges. And mm-hmm. if she is a hugger and somebody who really likes to seek out that kind of contact, I wouldn't necessarily jump to the idea that it's going to be a problem for her.
Mm-hmm.
If she shows Dad, look, you know, and Dad looks for a moment and turns away and you think that she feels sad, you can say, oh, hey,
right.
you know, that you're disappointed. You wanted Daddy to look longer.
Right.
And resonate with that
mm-hmm.
without blaming Dad.
Right.
But just acknowledging what she's experiencing. And that alone can help her feel
right.
seen.
Right.
And that disappointment's survivable. Right. And you've got her. And,
right.
and you're there.
But what's worrying me is she doesn't give a shit about Dad. She doesn't do that because she doesn't care. She doesn't want to hang out with Dad. She doesn't. And it's like, I was Daddy's little girl. I wanted to be with Dad all the time. My mom was crazy. But it's like, don't you want it? Why? And both of them, actually, they don't really care to hang out with him.
Well, you know what else is interesting, though, is identity development is different for multiples than mm-hmm. it is for singletons.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just your baby and you. They've got each other and their relationship with each other, which changes the game. They've got their relationship with you. There's gender stuff, there's lots of dynamics that are different. I think we're just starting to fully appreciate how mm-hmm. multiples, there's so many more of them now,
right,
how multiples kind of change the picture.
Right.
Let's take a break, ladies.
Okay.
Yes?
Yeah.
Lynette Carolla, yeah.
No, okay. I want to keep going.
I know you do. We got to take a break.
Okay.
Dr. Cheryl Arrett and Lynette Carolla. Lynette, Gary, give me all the lowdowns on For Crying Out Loud.
That's fine.
No. Give them to me.
You can find it on the web at cryingoutloudshow.com, follow it on Twitter at AceMoms or facebook.com/AceMoms.
And Cheryl is at Dr. Cheryl Arrett, A-R-U-T-T, at Dr. Cheryl Arrett, and website Dr. Cheryl Arrett. And we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with calls and more conversation about your family and some Jodi Arias talk, too. Okay? We've got a lot to get through here, so be right back. All right, it's time to remember our friends at GoToMeeting. Of course, teamwork is the foundation of every successful business. Meeting face-to-face is, well, that's the old-fashioned way. Now you can meet GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix by looking at the HD screens on your computer. You meet face-to-face electronically. But the really cool part, I'm sure you've heard us talk about this more than once, the documents. You can throw your documents up on the screen while you're sharing a chat, a video chat, in high definition, and you can work on these documents. You can throw your own document up. Your peers can work on your documents. You can work on theirs. It's what Adam and I do every time we have a meeting. Now, there's a contest we've got going here, which is if you could meet anyone living, dead, anyone, who would it be? Tweet us your answer with hashtag Dr. Drew Webcam and hashtag GoToMeeting. The winner gets a new Logitech HD webcam to use, of course, with their GoToMeeting meetings. Also some autographed show swag and more. So try GoToMeeting for free for 30 days. All you have to do is head over to GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code Drew. But keep this in mind, our contest, again, if you can meet anyone living or dead, tweet the answer, hashtag Dr. Drew Webcam, and hashtag GoToMeeting. The contest ends this Friday. Groovy, right, Lynette?
I love it.
Thank you.
I love it.
Good music.
Download it.
Lynette Corolla, Cheryl Arrett, and I'm going to out Cheryl on the way in here. Can you put up the commercial that Cheryl did as a child with the puppet?
What?
Is that available to us right now?
Cheryl, Are you kidding?
Cheryl was a child star. Tell us a little bit about your career as a little kid.
Oh, my God.
And by the way, to all the people that say that children's stars end up fucked
right.
up.
No.
Right.
Oh,
see?
My God.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No. You know, some people do express surprise that I'm not out robbing dry cleaners
right,
and
right.
stuff.
Just being drunk all the time.
Mm-hmm. I know some really good, sane people who grew up in the business, by the way. But I can go both ways.
I was doing commercials when I was 7, too.
I think being a little kid with a big mouth and red hair in New York, you know, sooner or later, somebody's going to spot you, a casting director. And when I was little, I started doing commercials when I was 3.
Really?
And, you know, worked till I was in my early 20s and kind of did a lot of, after school specials and the Burger King girl campaigns and shampoo stuff and candy. And
wow.
It was fun. And then
is that the Burger King thing?
Oh, my God. That's me as the Burger King girl.
That's right, 99 cents for this marvelous, magnificent, all-time classic, The Whopper.
By the way, Shai, I've never seen you at that age, but there's a definite Lindsay Lohan vibe going on.
Right? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, yeah.
You were younger.
She's cute.
Yeah.
Thank
like
you.
Lindsay.
You've
That's
seen me at about every age now, Drew.
Yeah.
Wow.
99 cents after 4 p.m.
Oh, my gosh.
That's me and polyester.
She looks the same.
Yeah. Thank you. Oh,
that's crazy that Gary found that, too.
There's other ones. Is the Muppet one available? Is that only you have
one? Oh, the Bubble Yum
one?
I think that one's on YouTube somewhere.
Bubble Yum. Look for that. Bubble Yum.
Bubble Yum. Oh, I missed that.
Oh, man. That's funny.
Yeah, thank God you didn't go that route.
Well, you know.
Because you're way too good in this business of I learned so much by watching you guys on TV.
Well, what I love about getting to do this stuff with the Behavior Bureau and everything is that when I was playing ingenues, it was kind of like, Cheryl, when you go and meet with the producers for this and they ask you what you thought, could you maybe not tell them this time?
Not so much.
Well, they didn't really want to know what I thought. They wanted... Mm-hmm. They wanted something else, which
right.
works for that. But the idea that there's a place for this passion about what makes people tick.
Is this the Bubble Yum? Is this it? Is this the one?
That's a different Bubble Yum commercial that I did.
Oh, wow. You did two?
Where is she? Which one is that you?
That's me.
She's at the computer.
This is a takeoff on the You Might Think video in the 80s.
How cute.
Oh,
oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
That's
okay.
Awesome.
I had no idea you were going to be screening all these.
Wait, I saw the one with the puppet. It's on there.
Oh man.
Okay.
Yeah. This is radio, though.
What
right?
people tick. Well, it'll be on the website. They can see it on the website.
That's what I'm hoping.
Oh my God. Okay. Okay. It's.
Is this it? This
I'm going to get teased some more.
Some more.
Oh, I can feel it now.
Okay.
Oh,
so anyway, let's go. Let's go. He's looking. So did we finish with the Corollas for the moment?
Yeah.
We're going to get Adam EMDR.
Yeah.
You're going to start being more clear about what's important.
Right.
You're going to contain, you know, if she says something very important about when Natalia seems upset and anxious about that, you acknowledge the feeling and let her know that you're there with it.
Right, right, right.
And it's okay.
Right.
You feel like this. And
yeah.
You know.
I mean, it's not that they don't want to hang out with Dad. That's not true.
Well, this point, when the queen bee doesn't give her attention,
right,
too. Even.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she also, at 6, almost 7, she may be in a I'm a girl right now, and
right.
boys
are.
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
You know,
yeah, she's
that's
going to
change
yeah.
most likely.
Yeah.
says the father of an older daughter.
most likely. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so should we talk? Oh, here it is. Is this it? Wait, this is another one. Look.
What do you have going over there?
Is that you?
That one is not me.
Oh, it's not
okay.
her. Okay,
that one's not me.
Not her.
She's young there.
So let's talk a little Jodi Arias before we go on.
Yeah.
What do you want to know, Lynette? This is for you.
Well, I want to know what you really think. No, I mean, obviously, you every night on Drew's show, you talk about her behavior and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to know is the borderline personality. That's something, and I kind of talked to Drew about it. Is that something that you're born with? Do you have are you predisposed to?
That's a great question.
To getting that? Is there in your environment?
Let me just say, we're accustomed to seeing it in trauma survivors. I'm sure we mostly encounter it.
That's right.
People with bad trauma end up with borderline personality disorders. But
okay.
it's not a necessary quality.
Right.
There are genetic elements here, too.
And
okay.
and we're talking about chronic trauma, and there's a vulnerable period, especially between like a year and a half and 3 years old, that if there's a lot of trauma and loss during that developmental time,
mm-hmm.
people can be more vulnerable. But here's the thing. There are lots of people who have borderline
right.
disorders. They don't do what this
well,
woman
right.
did.
Right.
And, you know, I feel sometimes really protective of the people that are struggling
yeah.
with
mm-hmm.
this because
with borderline. Because it's common. It's a common
It's a common trait?
Yeah.
It's literally a common trait. It's uh-huh. not a super common disorder, but it is a common trait.
So it's not necessarily a disorder.
It is a disorder.
It is a disorder.
You can have the traits, but not the whole, not enough to have the disorder,
kind of completely takes over your life kind of thing.
It's criteria. How
what
pervasive
are, can
is
you
it?
Tell? By the way, I just found out what it. I thought borderline personality disorder was like somebody that was like teetering on the
psychotic.
Yes,
spectrum. That's uh-huh. that's the history of that disorder. It's uh-huh. originally what they thought it was. Now uh-huh. they think of it quite differently.
So
yeah.
what are the?
Or sometimes I refer to it as Madonna's second hit.
Mm. Ooh, ooh,
that was borderline too.
Oh yeah.
But it's something where people have they have a lot of trouble regulating their sense of self, knowing who they are, their feelings. They think in very black and white terms.
Mm-hmm.
They idealize and then devalue the people around them. Mm. They're all good or all bad. Mm. They are preoccupied with a fear of abandonment. They are terrified that someone is going to leave them. And when someone doesn't treat them well, or does something that even they have a perception of being rejected, they can go into an enormous rage because they feel like the bottom drops out and they're worthless and they're terrible. If someone says no or rejects them,
mm-hmm.
there's nothing inside they can hold on to soothe them to get them through that. They have a really hard time feeling.
And the really frustrating thing about borderlines is that they will, when they idealize you, it's very satisfying, gratifying, but they will continue to push you
uh-huh.
until you disappoint them.
Like they almost kind of...
They'll set it up.
They don't know they're alive until they're...
No, they'll set you up. When I was early in my practicing, I didn't know all these things. I was still working at a psychiatric hospital, learning all these things, mm-hmm. but I was willing to do anything for anybody anytime. Well, all of a sudden, I'd find this group of people that would like start calling me at 3 in the morning and making demands. And I need you to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, it's 3 in the morning? Are you fucking kidding me? You need to ask me if you take an aspirin or not? I mean, it's 3 in the morning.
Right.
And I'd be like, yes, ma'am. That's absolutely. In fact, here's why aspirin's good for you. And early in my career, I had to be perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I started learning about borderlines, and they would literally mop the floor with me.
Wow.
And then if one time after 800, 3 in the morning calls, I went, you know, why don't we try this differently? Why don't we wait till the office wakes up in the morning? You're a piece of shit.
Wow.
I can never speak to you again.
Wow.
It's horrible. And then they get aggressive.
Wow.
Yeah. There was a book that we referred to that it's sort of
I Hate You, Don't Leave Me.
Yeah, I Hate You, Don't Leave Me, which is such a – it's a feeling that you get a lot from somebody who's in this kind of state. But I have so much compassion for – what people who go through that go through, and it's very, very tricky and delicate to be working with somebody. But
you can only technically work with a couple of them at a time.
But people can get
so
better.
Can you have some of one? Like, can you have just that one trait, but not the yes. other one yeah. of sure. you know, when things are black and white.
The real sure. characteristic, and you just have that one. The real characteristic of the borderline is the splitting, which is right. all good, all bad,
right?
And real chaos in relationships. Right. They can't maintain relationships.
It's so. One crisis after. Yeah.
Oh, there
another.
Is. This is what I was looking for. There it is.
This long.
How long does Bubble Yum's flavor last?
Flavor lasts this long.
So long.
Oh my God! How old were you?
So long in Bubble Yum.
I think I was 9.
Oh my gosh!
I think I was about 9. At that
you know
point.
What? When I was going on auditions, uh-huh. they were like, I never fit the bill for the. For what they were looking for. They always wanted red hair, freckles, cute,
that's
all American.
So funny.
I had an afro and brown eyes. And
the redhead Jewish kid. That's what I want. We want that.
Yeah, that's actually what gets hired, I think, a lot of the
yeah.
time. But
wow.
I'm sure you were an adorable child. You're a gorgeous woman now.
Thank you.
You know,
thank
it's.
You.
It's Drew just likes to find these yeah. these old yeah. archive.
They're fun. Yeah.
They are fun. They really are fun.
So, do you treat? Are you seeing patients that have? Is that what you do, or what? What do you, who? What kind of people do you treat? Or
the people that I treat are really in sort of three large categories. Mm-hmm. One, I work a lot with creative artists and people in the entertainment industry.
Oh.
And I work a lot with trauma and PTSD, post-traumatic stress. And sometimes those two groups overlap.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also work with the fertility population,
who
are trying to conceive and going through IVF and donors and all that other stuff. So those three, you know, you do have sort of general population regular stuff that comes in. But when I left the business, the entertainment business, I thought that was it. And then all these people who were creative started coming in and feeling like, oh, my God, you get it. You understand what I do. And it just – I realized that, you know, 2 decades of that gave me some life experience that helped and then learned some more.
Wow.
But the trauma PTSD stuff, if you see trauma, you see borderline dynamics. Chronic or complex PTSD, people tend to have this kind of thing. The thing that makes Jody so different is that she was a mix of borderline and psychopath.
So, yeah. I know that because I learned that on your show.
Right.
Can you explain really what that means?
Psychopath is more genetic. Like, okay. I think if we did spec scans on her, we'd see temporal lobe dysfunction and frontal lobe problems and stuff where she literally can't empathize, really can't really understand emotions very well at all, even though she has them and they're bad. Then there's splitting and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Can't it certainly in certain states doesn't get it at all.
And is that why you think because of what she did that she's got the borderline mixed?
The borderline is all the crazy stalking and all that kind of stuff. That what followed, which is this goal-directed, cold-blooded, bizarre planning and lying and carrying out stuff. We're all looking at ourselves. We all look like, how's she able to do that?
Yeah. Right.
Well, she has a certain kind of brain. That's how she's able to do that.
The rage, the explosive rage stuff.
Borderline.
The ice in your veins, able to look someone in the eye and have no shame or embarrassment, just lie to their face and make stuff up. Psychopath, exactly.
Oh, my God.
That's the part
that's a rare combo.
It's sort of a perfect storm kind of thing. And that's the part that Dr. Drew keeps saying he has such trouble with. Most people who go into the helping professions are warm, fuzzy people. They care about feelings. They have empathy for people. And a psychopath
confusing
really doesn't.
Yeah, they're confusing.
But how do you treat?
You can't.
Because
you don't
they
treat
don't
psychopaths.
Know.
You don't treat psychopaths.
If you try to treat a psychopath, you end up teaching them how to mimic real feelings and become a better psychopath.
Wow.
Yeah, psychopaths.
What's the difference between psychopath and sociopath?
People argue about that. I think they're very different myself. Sociopaths,
tell me what you think.
Well, I think sociopaths, because I deal with lots of sociopaths, they seem quite treatable to me. I treat them, well, not in all circumstances, but I treat them in the setting of addiction when they have to change or they'll die.
Right.
And the sociopath basically is someone that they understand feelings. They in certain states can get that feelings exist, but ultimately you're really there to serve them. They it's all about them and their needs, and you're just a tool that they – not that you're a tool in the sense of an inanimate object. They understand they're manipulating a person.
Right.
Well, a psychopath, I'm not sure really understands they're manipulating a person.
I have a question, though, about that. When you are talking about a sociopath that you think is treatable in an addiction setting, when they stop using,
Yep.
Do you still see the sociopathic traits?
Many times. Not necessarily. It certainly comes down a huge notch. Sometimes it goes away. But it comes down a huge notch. They have to work on it. That's why honesty, you know, rigorous honesty becomes such a central feature for any of these people.
Mm-hmm.
They have to own up to when they're being a bullshitter, when they're doing stuff, when they're not paying attention to feelings or other people's feelings and boundaries and things. And that's all health for everybody.
Because what I find with the people that I've worked with addictions is that very often they develop kind of a concept of their
addict self.
Their addict self, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that addict self will stop at nothing to get what it wants and exploit people.
Well,
that's very sociopathic.
Right.
But they know that part, eventually that part's not their friend. It's not going to help them out.
What do you think of her, Jody's parents? Because what did you make of those videos? Oh. Because I found it very troubling. And I think one of you guys said it on Drew's show, because I noticed that too, where the dad didn't call her, when he was explaining to her about her, he was saying, her mother. He would call her mother and scream and blah, blah, blah. He never the other way around. He said, my wife. He would call my wife. Not her mother. He would say, my wife. And I thought I don't know. Isn't that a little – would you say
– Well, let's see what you're about. The two did not seem like connected at all.
And
they seemed like two different parents of two different kids.
Yes.
And what I thought I was seeing was the mom was dealing with the borderline part. Mm. She'd get all the chaos and the rage and the crying and the blah, blah, blah. And the dad was sort of seeing that cold-blooded part and was going, there's something wrong here. I don't know.
But he seemed
a little that way too, by the way.
Exactly.
Which is, by the way, psychopathy is thought to be a genetically transmitted thing.
Right. That's what I was – because he would like, I don't know, man. You know, she's lost it. And, you know, like what dad talks like that?
In such a blasé kind of way.
Like,
yeah.
Man, I don't know. You know, you know, we found the gun was the same gun that was – oh, really? Wow.
I thought that was
– wow.
That was brilliant, Dr. Drew. When you came up with that split, that kind of dad was connected to the sociopathic part of her and handling that, and mom was connected to the borderline part – The other thing about this splitting, it's not just that they think in black and white. It's that they tend to kind of divvy up feelings and put one set in one person and one set in another person and then pit them against each other to fight it out.
Gosh.
It even got kind of acted out on the show, I think, a little bit with you and Mark at that one point, you know? And it was fascinating because, you know, people start taking on feelings that really aren't theirs. That kind of – it's like someone tossed them a hot potato and now all of a sudden they have to deal with it.
It's called projective identification.
Right. Oh, really?
And so I thought that's what Judy was doing when she said, I want the death penalty. What she's saying is I have a murderous rage inside me.
Uh-huh.
We know that. We've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not mine.
Mm-hmm.
It's theirs.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they're going to act it out on me and then it's their guilty.
Right.
Your fault.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think that it did get put in the jurors that they absorbed that.
The defense should have maybe zoned in on the dad or something and maybe blamed the
parents. Well, no, we may hear that in the next trial.
Yeah.
We may hear some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you can't blame. Blaming is a bad game.
Why do you think that the parents didn't
intervene?
Didn't speak on her behalf in a circumstance like this?
I think she was trying to call the shots back there. I think she didn't want anybody to so that she could – don't they – so that she could do – somebody was saying that
– do her own thing?
With the appeal, no, that she could
– oh.
Later on down the road say –
she didn't have she got bad advice.
Right, she had inadequate – yeah. Where was the people that are talking on my behalf? How come I didn't – you know? I don't know. I don't know.
It's reasonable. It's hard to know. We think very differently than attorneys do, so it's hard to know what they are doing to make her different than what we think we're seeing.
That's one of the most interesting things on the show, too, because – you know, the attorneys are trained to take a side and make their point on that side and to get someone to commit to a really narrow position. And the psychologists, mental health people are trained to kind of look at it from different points of view and open it up and not.
Well, that's why it's such an interesting show. I mean, that's why it's so great. It's such a perfect combo.
Let's take some calls. This is Lori. What's up? Tori, rather. Tori, what's up? Whoop, I didn't get it. One second, Tori. There you go, Tori.
Hey, Dr. Drew, how are you?
Good. What's up?
I was calling. My question is, first of all, I just feel like that, the jurors kind of, they get on the TV and talk that they feel like they let the family down. And I kind of feel like that, they did since they couldn't all agree. I feel like, it's back at the beginning when the
Hey, Tori, can I just interrupt? I'm having an interesting reaction hearing you talk. And that is, like, I feel like you really need to talk about this case, which is kind of interesting, right? Do you have anybody else you can talk to about this?
I do. I actually,
do you talk about it a lot?
No, I don't talk about it a lot.
Okay. I just got this sense I get this sense like, I need to talk about this.
Really?
Maybe it's because you've been on hold too long.
I guess I feel so strongly about, you know, at the beginning I wasn't really interested. And I just, you know, I don't know. I think it's just really sickening to think of her sitting in the cell where she wants to be, you know, because she doesn't want to be sent to prison yet. And she's still getting to tweet and, you know, everything. And they still don't have answers.
Well, let me flip it around, though. And this is kind of an interesting thought. And this is, please, everybody, I'm not in any way taking aim at Travis's family. These people have been through it. And I think most people know I've, like affection for like Samantha and stuff. Mm-hmm. I really want to take care of them.
Yeah, I know.
And I worry about Steven and that guy, poor kid, needs help. Mm-hmm. But they're in – talk about rage. I mean, they are enraged. Between their need for – it's really – they feel – it feels like a vengeance. Yeah. They really need – between their rage and vengeance and Jody, our system needs to be interposed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Just because they want to fucking kill her, and a lot of us do, doesn't mean she should die.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So whenever I hear people, Tori, say, well, it's a shame the family didn't get what they wanted, it's like, yeah, I'm not sure that's what we should wish for necessarily.
Right. I find that bizarre that they're going to do it again. Like,
yeah. You think the state is going to forget? I think the family should let it go.
Well, I know. You said that.
Yeah. They need closure.
Well, but they may never get closure. She's going to sit on death row for 20 years.
Closure
get five appeals.
Is overrated.
I mean, even if she gets life.
Hang on a second.
I mean, I feel like that's a...
Tori, hold on a second.
The system needs to intervene.
Well, you're right. But Cheryl just said something very important. Because I agree with you. So state that again and why.
Okay. What I just said is closure is overrated. I think people do and put themselves through so much because they believe that they're going to get this feeling where that agony they're in is going to lift and they're going to feel better and they're going to get closure. And so many people believe that they need her to die in order to get closure.
No.
And if they can realize that there are ways that they can heal and that this woman is never getting out of prison, and if there are ways that they can heal without it having to be connected to what somebody else does, that's when they'll actually be free.
Interesting.
Right? It does. Yes. And I think you quoted a couple things on the show.
The studies. Yeah, there are a lot of studies. The thing is that when we have executions, we have execution teams. We have people whose job it is to spend the last few days with the person who's going to be executed. It's their job to pull them away from their families just for the last goodbye. It's their job to strap them down and put the needles in and then to take the body off the stretcher. Mm. These people get so traumatized by doing this job.
Wow.
And the families of the person who, you know, the family member of the person who committed the initial crime, they didn't do anything.
Mm.
They're now families of murder victims, too.
Right.
They are traumatized. And even the people who think that they're going to feel relief because justice will be done by watching the person who killed their loved one die, they often get traumatized by watching somebody be executed in front of them. It can't get those images out of their mind and then have to struggle with the gap between how they expected they would feel and how they find they actually do feel, which is what the studies say.
And I think you mentioned something about the behavior of crowds too, which I'm very fascinated about. When people have public executions, how crowds respond to that. Because the crowds have bloodlust. I mean, look at the Aztecs and things. Mm-hmm. And they end up being re-traumatized and then need to do it again.
Ugh.
I mean, that's why these things like guillotine, you know, French Revolution stuff come in these huge flurries, because it galvanizes us and makes us feel a catharsis as a group.
Right.
But it doesn't help.
It doesn't do something good.
Well, it takes the aggression that people feel and someone else
acts it out for them in a
particular kind of way.
I have to say, this trial and listening to you guys made me think different about the death penalty, because I've always been for the death penalty.
Well, by the way, I'm not saying I'm against. I'm for it for that Ariel right. Castro guy.
Yeah.
I'm for it for the guy that tortured that poor doctor's family. It's like no problem.
Right, right.
No
You're,
problem.
Right.
It's just there needs to be caution with how it's applied. That's
right.
All I'm saying.
Well,
right.
The thing that I really take away from situations like this is regardless of what your point of view is, and I respect people on both sides of the issue, it is one thing to talk about this kind of thing in the abstract. It is yet another. It's a whole other animal to be faced with that decision yourself.
Right.
And to have to make that choice.
And that's what we're hearing
choice.
From the jurors, that there's
right.
really this intense thing.
Right.
Let's take another call here. It's from Barbara. Barbara, what's up?
Oh, hello, Dr. Drew. Thank you for taking my call. It has absolutely nothing to do with what everyone
It's okay. It does a little bit. We were talking about spouses and wives and husbands and stuff, so it gets back into that topic again. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you. I am 59. I was single parent, raised both of my children. This was after divorce. And my son is 35. He's the oldest. And his girlfriend, or Cruella, as I call her.
Cruella.
We must joke. excuse me. Is 47. Now, they are together. They live together in her home. They have my absolutely stunningly wonderful granddaughter, who will be 2 soon. And here's what it is. In the last couple of years, well, probably for many years with him, I've always helped him financially. We can leave that for another show so we don't talk about me. Through college, done virtually everything. It's because I wanted to. Yes, I'm sure there's other issues, but he's my baby, so I did that. Okay. So I've also taken care of my granddaughter while I've gone back to school recently to get my master's or finish my master's. Once I had to stop doing that because it was just all too much all the way around, time-wise, all of a sudden his girlfriend determined that, well, you know, I'm saying this, that, you know, she's not doing anything for us anymore. And so now he can no longer come to see me in my home with my granddaughter without her.
Mm.
And he explains it as, well, you know what, we are, not a couple, we are, she's a part of the family now, she's a member of the family, and I thought, you know, I said, no.
So basically he can't do anything without her.
Absolutely. He can no longer come and see his mother.
I've known a lot of people like that. I've come across quite a few people.
Well, they all need to get together and be put in a room somewhere.
What I don't understand is it that the guy can't go do anything without her, or just can't see his family of origin without her?
They got to be together.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All the time, because they are a couple now. They are a package deal. That was it. And I thought, gee, I have a package for you. No, I'm sorry. I'm sarcastic, but it's just...
Can I ask a question? Do you think that Gary actually brought this up? Do you think, producer Gary, do you think that maybe they're getting a vibe that you don't like the girl?
Oh, my goodness. She absolutely knows that. But I don't think she knew that until fairly recently.
But she may have sensed it, and she doesn't want to sort of stoke the flames, as it were. She wants to be around when you're with her husband or whatever he is.
And the yeah. granddaughter, is this yeah. her daughter, your grandchild?
Both of theirs. It's theirs, yes. Okay. My granddaughter, yes.
Okay.
It's hers, yes.
In a weird way, it's kind of healthy because it's kind of preventing a split.
Yeah, she's yeah. saying if my little girl is with her grandmother, you need to accept me too.
And we all need to be together, so we all need to know what everyone's saying, and that we love you, but we can't really yet trust you being alone with the dad and what might happen there. We might split the dad against the mom.
Mm.
And
mm-hmm.
on the other hand, I could see this as, again, another borderline process. I'm so fearful of abandonment, I can't let this guy out of my sight.
Right.
Yeah, it's weird. We don't know. We'd have to know, we'd have to meet them right. to know what this is.
Very I find she actually is a social worker as well, and has, when he has wanted to leave before,
and
you know, told him
that
he knows how to word things and make things happen and make him not look good. So if you're thinking of taking, you know, Paloma, their daughter, my granddaughter, you know, think again, basically. So, you know, hearing all this and knowing the things that have gone on, I've been behind him, and I'm going to tell you the truth. I've actually in the past been really decent, like, gee, I don't know anything about problems you guys are having, because I didn't want any more in it, you know, any more dilemma in it for her and her twisted little mind there. And I don't want a problem for my granddaughter.
Okay, so hold on. You know, so Cheryl, what would you say that, again, I'm hoping things like Cruella and Twisted Little Mind are reserved for us rather than something that she would talk about to her friends, peers, husband's peers.
But I'm also wondering how private a domain this is.
I know.
You know, I think that the best possible outcome for Paloma is for somehow her mom, who I'm sure she loves, and you to find a way to make nice.
Yeah.
And to find a way to get along with one another, even if there are things that you don't like about each other, even if there's some feelings that are tough, you both have a bunch of people you really love in common. This, you know, your son and his daughter. And I think that she may be being controlling, but she may also be just trying to set a boundary.
And the fact is we really don't know for sure because we don't know these people. But on some level, it doesn't sound all bad. We're saying
that's right.
So,
right.
Well, ladies, that wraps our time up. We're about done here. I know you guys. I'll leave you out in the other room to go carry on. I know there's a lot more to go.
Well,
here.
I'm getting her number for Adam.
I think he'd be interested because that sort of suits his sort of stuff he finds interesting.
He'll be open to it.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. After he very very open to psychology and treatment and stuff like that. He's had a bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
And she won't be able to talk to us anymore about him though.
Oh, that's okay.
We'll have to find other things to talk about. I'm sure there are.
Cheryl Arutt, Cheryl Arutt, Arutt, at Dr. Errol Sherritt. Website, Dr. Errol Sherritt.
Excuse me?
What did I say? Errol Sherritt?
Yes.
Cheryl Arutt. Cheryl Arutt. Dr. Cheryl Arutt.com is the website, and Facebook / Dr. Arutt is the Facebook page.
And you can find Lynette on Twitter at Lynette Carolla. The podcast is for Crying Out Loud. The website for that is cryingoutloudshow.com. And you can follow the show on Twitter at Ace Moms and Facebook.com/Ace Moms.
That is the great Gary Haftard, who is a big advocate of that show.
Not a Haftard.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Cheryl. This has been a delight.
It's been great.
So thank you, Lynette, too. It was fun.
Thank you, Drew.
And thank you to Adam for letting us chat about it a little bit. Let him know that we love him and this will
and
be his benefit.
You both have been a big help, actually, for me.
Thank you.
See you next time.
This is Corolla Digital.